Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com. It is home of the ambitious upstart. And today I've got another interview in the 10K series. This is a series of interviews that I do with entrepreneurs about their first 10,000 in sales. And today's guest, like some of the others, has blown past 10,000, but I still want you to get to hear how he earned the first 10K. And the interesting thing about today's guest is he and I have actually known each other because he's been in the Mixergy community for a long time. And I asked him what he gets out of listening to Mixergy, why he's able to actually use it. And a cool thing happened while he was telling me in private what he does with Mixergy interviews. He got an alert on his phone. And I said, what's the alert about? And he says, you know, I get an alert every day with my motto for my current obsession for the year. And I realized that that's why he gets so much out of Mixergy interviews and out of so much of life. He takes really complicated ideas and he breaks them down into formulas, and then he further condenses them down into mottos that he reminds himself up with this alert on his phone. And I wouldn't be surprised, as we got to know him, with visuals around his office. All right, so I've talked him up too much. Let me just get right into the introduction here so we can hear his story. The entrepreneur is Brian Harris. He's the founder of Video Fruit. They create videos that help companies grow their businesses. One of my favorite kind of videos that they create are those explainer videos that, again, take tough concepts and make them easier to understand so that your potential clients understand why they should be working with you. He also happens to teach a course that offers step-by-step formulas to help you grow your business using videos. We'll hear about how he built that business. I'll pry and ask him really challenging questions about where his revenue comes from. We'll see how much we can find out and how much revenue he has. And it's all thanks to my friend, Scott Edward Walker. He is the entrepreneur's lawyer. If you're looking for a lawyer and you've got a startup, check out walkercorporatelaw.com. Brian, welcome.
Welcome. I kind of fell into a trance there. I thought I was watching a podcast episode for a minute and then realized I'm actually being interviewed. It's an honor, Andrew.
Well, thank you. It's good to have you on here. And, you know, I've got a really nice breakdown because you and I did a pre-interview of how you built this up. And I love the step-by-step process that we'll take in this interview. But none of it would have happened if not for this job that you had before and your request of them about SEO. What was that?
Yes. So, and this was, I guess, late 2012, maybe September 2012. I'd come on board in there a year and I ran the e-commerce division of the company. It was an engineering firm that specialized in conveyor. And we were switching websites. I had an old, archaic Joomla site that was completely static, but we had 10,000 SKUs in inventory that we wanted to sell on our site. We got good traffic from it. So I'd convinced them to upgrade. We were going to Magento and WordPress and have this nice new site. And I warned them. I said, hey, guys, you need to hire an SEO firm because I don't know anything about it. I'll just be upfront, you know, to make sure all your rankings don't go down. And they didn't, and they went down.
They didn't, and because of that, where are they now on search results?
Oh, I looked a couple weeks ago, and they were page 20 plus on several of their high priority keywords. I mean, they're completely off the grid. But they're number one on Google AdWords, which means they're spending $5-$10 a click right now on that very competitive keyword.
So it must be really frustrating. You're working in a company. They hire you because they trust you, but they still aren't listening to what you're saying. And that's one of the reasons why many people decide, hey, I'm going to go be an entrepreneur. Is it that they were cash constrained, or did they have money to spend on the site?
No, I think they oversimplify that. They oversimplified what it took to get to number one in Google, honestly. And it's way more complex, and it gets more complex every day. And it happened to the day we launched the site. Within a week or so, Penguin or Panda or whichever one was out in early 2013 hit, which hurt them even further because they were doing tons of black hat techniques. But they just, you know, just like any business owner needs to be cocky and think they know everything. I mean, that's, you know, to a degree, you have to have that element to push back the resistance and the negativity. But they had that to a fault in a lot of areas. And what it does is kill their ability to hire really good people and to keep them, because I don't want to work in an environment where you don't listen to the things I'm good at, and you put me in charge of something, but you're not going to listen to me when I give you advice on how to improve it. And that, you know, in any company, you're gonna have that to a degree because somebody else owns it. But when it happens time and time and time and time again, and negative result after negative result after negative result, eventually you're just like, guys, like, this isn't the place for me. Like, I gotta leave.
And by the way, while you're feeling this, you still couldn't leave. We're going to hear about part of the story that happened while you're still there. One last thing about this before we talk about the moment that you decided to take off with this business, the buy buttons. What happened to that?
Yeah, so we spent all this money. I mean, we had spent $30,000+ because not only did we have to inventory all of these 10,000 SKUs, because basically we had a big, literally an Excel table on the website that listed some stuff out. But we had over 10,000 items we were selling. It was a complete nightmare. There's no way you're ever going to sell all that. So we put all this time and energy. We got another warehouse, moved all, 100+ trucks of inventory over there, cataloged everything with a barcode as it went in. And we spent tons of effort, tons of man hours doing it. We get ready to launch the site, and I get an email from the owner saying, hey, I want you to take all of the buy now buttons off of the website. So nobody can physically buy anything on the website anymore. You know, we're selling high dollar products. You know, it's stuff that's $1,000-$2,000+ all the way up to $100,000. So a lot of, but we sell, probably half of our inventory is stuff under $1,000 that people don't want to call you for. They don't want to do it. So, it was completely like, what's the downside of leaving them? You know, and it's just stuff like that constantly, just didn't make any sense at all.
Okay. A small taste of what was going on over there. And then you read an article by Tim Ferriss, a repeat Mixergy interviewee back in May 2012. What was the article about?
Yeah, so this was before the website launched and everything, but the annoyance factor had already started to creep up, several things that had happened, and, just a little bit of discomfort. And I've always been an entrepreneurial type of guy. So I read this Tim Ferriss article, and it was written by Chad Moretta, and he broke down the process of how he built iPhone apps, and he laid out the process and talked about how he mocked them up and hired a programmer and marketed them and did that whole process. So we're sitting back in our back office cubicle, and a buddy walks in, and we were slow at the time. He was like, hey, man, we ought to build an iPhone app. I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. So let's do it. So we started down the process of building it. And I think 3 months later, that was like April, May of 2012, around August. I think we'd wound up launching two of them at the same time, which is a terrible mistake. And both of them completely bombed. I think they cost us about $1,200 a piece, and we made maybe $800 total back on
them. That's not a complete bomb. $1,200 when you bring in $800, it's not bad at all. I mean, especially for a first one. But what was interesting to me when we talked before we started was the process that Chad took is what opened your eyes. You used to think, I have to create everything or else I'm not a creator. Chad and Tim Ferriss opened your eyes to what?
Yeah, they opened your eyes to something. It's another principle that I've always known. Like, I've been in construction sales for a while. I was selling, wood packages to houses to building contractors. So the concept exists in that industry of you're a general contractor. That doesn't mean you're the guy out there swinging the hammer or the guy laying the concrete. You hire people to do that. And I just never connected the dots on programming and building online, applications or iPhone apps or whatever. I never connected the dots of using that theory, but using it to make iPhone apps. And Chad, just when I saw that article, everything just kind of synced in line. And I had another one of those epiphanies later come in the video, which it just for some reason didn't connect in my brain. This the light bulb went off. It was like, hey, all I have to do is be able to write a blueprint, basically, in housing terminology. If I can give somebody a blueprint and go hire a builder, I'm basically a general contractor for this application. And that's what we did for those two apps. And we wound up building two more a little later, just a few months later, that wound up doing really well and still do good today.
Let's go slowly, because I really want to understand this and not blow past this first experience. You read an article, and unlike most people, you're a doer, and you took action on it. And the article showed you how to be a guy who creates a blueprint and have someone else build the app for you.
Right.
You said that you blew it. Let's talk about what you did right and then what you wish you would have done differently, because I want to learn from what you did right. How did you get an app that was in your head, blueprinted, and out the door?
Oh, man, I still have the sketched notebook paper. One of the coolest things you can ever do, whether you make money on it or not, is to have an idea, draw it, and then X number of days later for it to be like a real thing. Like when you build a house, that's a cool process. When you walk in there and see a blueprint, and then 6 months later, you're like living in this thing. That's just really cool. So doing that in business, I'd never done, from scratch to that before. So I literally took a notebook piece of paper. And I think we used a whiteboard at the time. We stayed after work or did it over lunch or something, and we were brainstorming ideas of what we would do. And at the time, there was an app. I can't think of the name of it now, but it was really popular, and you would guess logos. So it would have a portion of a logo up there and a portion of it removed, and you would type in what you thought it was.
This was the iPhone app that you created or had.
That was one that was popular at the time.
Okay.
So we wanted to do something similar. We figured if people liked logos, guessing logos, then we'll do slogans.
Okay.
So we did. We literally did slogans. So just do it. We would have just and then a space for do it. And we came up with a list of 1,000 of them and put it into a game form. And it was a really cool idea, and the concept was proven. I still don't know why I didn't succeed. I'm not sure on that. But the process is really cool of drawing it. And I literally used Keynote. And once I drew it on a piece of paper, I used Keynote and bought a Keynote template. I think Keynotopia, yep. Amir over there has put them together. And you just literally drag and drop and make it exactly how you want it to look on your phone, every screen of it.
Sketch it out on a piece of paper, get Keynotopia using Keynote, and you can actually today use Keynotopia with PowerPoint. But the point of it is you use those two apps, either Keynote or PowerPoint, to design what your app is supposed to look like. And they just let you drag and drop the elements, the drop-down menus, the buttons, etc. So you can give it a nice look without having to be a designer. You create that, you add some instructions, and then you pass that on to a developer. Am I right?
Yeah, it's all about the spec. It's all about how well you can communicate. So if you can draw down every aspect of what this thing looks like, I would shoot a video of me with Keynote on the screen and me talking and walking them through. I click this button, I want this to happen. I want this animation to occur. So your application's as good as you can describe it to somebody else. And once you have that package, it's a matter of going to any number of sites and finding somebody that's good and going through the interview process
of
finding somebody.
Do you still have that, the spec sheet?
I believe I do. Yeah, I save almost everything, so I'm pretty sure I do.
So if someone asks you for it in the comment, would you feel comfortable sharing that with them?
Yeah, even if I don't have that particular app, I do have quite a few that I've designed since that I can send along. Yeah,
okay.
Because that's really cool to see. I mean, seeing Chad's really helped. I don't think he shared his original mock-up, but those really are effective.
One of the reasons why I want to see yours is because I like the way that you think, and I think that you think in an organized way. So I'm not pretending that what you're sending out is the perfect example of how to do things and that you wouldn't adjust it if you could look at it. What I'm suggesting is that it's going to be a good example of how this process is done. And if someone in the audience can just ask for it in the comments, I'd love for you to link them up if you feel comfortable. Cool?
Absolutely. And you can use it for anything. I mean, anything you see on a computer, a website, an application, a web app, anything, you can use that exact same method for.
But Brian, the part that I'm really good at is understanding your process. The part that I can never communicate is the details of the actual spec sheet. And if we can see the spec sheet, we can see what you're thinking of. Do you describe what a button looks like, or do you just leave the image? Do you have a text that says it? How long is the text? All that stuff. If we see the actual spec sheet, I think it'll be helpful. So
yeah,
it only costs you $1,200 to get this thing going. You put it up in the App Store. You said, I can see what worked. Tell me one thing that you wish you'd done differently, that now you're more experienced, you've learned, and you can pass on to my audience.
Is be weary of partnerships. I'm really good friends and still am with the guy I developed the app with. But I think Paul Graham said being in a partnership is like being married but without the sex. You know, it's like that, but maybe worse. I mean, because your philosophies on everything have to line up, because you can't just have an urge and go do it. You have to pass it by somebody now. And everything gets watered down if you're not careful. And that was one of the first times I'd ever had a partnership. So it probably still wouldn't have done well. So I'm not blaming it on that. I'm just saying that was a contributing factor.
Give me an example of something that got watered down because you had a partner.
So promotion. So the second app we did was a caption app. And it just allowed people to suck in a picture. We had a group of pre-populated captions that were kind of funny, and you could post it right to Facebook or Twitter or whatever. So just the design of the app, you know, I had something that I really liked and wanted to run with, and you had to pass it. So everything takes like 5 times longer because you have to text it over and, do you like this? Okay, well, let's do it. It increases your workload a lot. If I had to do it again, I would be in charge of design. He would be in charge of promotion. Leave me alone on design. I'll leave you alone on promotion. Just having clear, defined roles. And neither one of us knew what we were doing. You know, doing it again without the knowledge would probably happen the exact same way. But that's just something to be mindful of. A second thing is just promotion of your app. Like, you need to have a plan on how you're going to actually get people to download it. And just uploading it to the App Store probably isn't good enough. Now, you might turn into Flappy Birds and you literally have no idea, and you turn on your bank account the next day and you've made $50,000. But that most likely, 99.9% of the time, isn't going to happen. So if not, what are you going to do? And we didn't have a plan for that.
All right. This is really good advice. One is, if you're going to have a partner, think about what the responsibilities are going to be when you get started, so that you're not both second guessing each other. And the other is, think about ways of getting customers other than just being in the App Store. Do I have that right?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So that didn't exactly set you free from the job that you weren't happy with. It didn't set you on the path to wealth and to being on Mixergy, but it was another step towards it. The next step was, let me see if I can take a look here. Was the next thing that you did, was it the web apps or was it the 5 o'clock club?
Yeah. Emailo and Gmailo were the two next steps.
The next one. So yep. This is your decision to step away from the App Store and go into the broader internet with web apps.
Exactly.
Okay. How'd you get the idea for the two apps that we're going to be talking about now, the two web applications?
So Trello had come out. Trello.com is a cool project management app. If you don't use it now, I'd recommend it. It had come out sometime in the recent past. I don't remember the exact dates. And I was using it for work stuff at my current job. I was using it to manage those apps we built. You know, we were using it just as a to-do list, project manager. But one really big pain point was all of these contractors we had hired, and even amongst our own communication, we're getting all of these emails, but we couldn't tie them into our project management system, Trello, at all. Because at the time, Trello had no way to send email to their application. So a good friend of mine is a enterprise level software developer, and we've always looked for opportunities to work together. Nothing's really ever synced up before. But I was just talking to him about Trello and was like, hey man, this is one big pain point I have. And at the time, and I think they still do, Trello has a open board for all the dirt of development. I think it's Trello.com/dev. And you can see all of the features that people have suggested, the ones that are up to be developed, the ones that are in development, and the ones that have been launched. And you could go in and literally see, like, they voted how many, once they put a card in there of, I want email to Trello integrations, people would vote whether they like it or not. So there, I think at the time there were 600, maybe 1,000 people that voted for it. And I was like, hey, I have the problem. Somebody else has the problem. I like it. Let's build it. So we wound up building, I think Gmailo came first. And Gmailo is a Chrome extension that you install, and it puts a little button right above or right beside your compose button that says add to Trello. So you click an email, click add to Trello, it gives you a pop-up, you hit OK, and it sends it off to your Trello board. So it really expedites your workflow, so we can get all of those outsource contractor emails and all of our stuff into Trello to use.
Okay, I like that you validated this, that you didn't just say, I have this problem, great, the rest of the world must be the same. you validated it. Why'd you decide to go with a Chrome application first?
That's what I wanted. I wanted a button in Gmail. I thought that would work for me. So
that's the first thing you released, and then how did that go?
It went well. So it wound up, I think the peak of its revenue was around $400 to $500 a month. It's a recurring monthly fee. I think it's $5 a month. You'd have to go to the website to see. We don't manage that a lot anymore. It kind of just runs itself. Like, we'll update bugs every now and then as Gmail kind of changes their UI. But besides that, it just kind of is a self-running thing. But just about a couple weeks after that, we started getting a lot of emails from people that saw Gmailo and said, hey, I want a way that I can just do it on my phone, that I can do it if I have Safari or Firefox. It was a Chrome-only extension. And we were thinking about maybe we'll make a Outlook plugin, a Safari plugin, a Firefox plugin. And you have all these things that are doing $400 or $500 a month, which is decent, but you got to support all that. So we had the idea, why don't we make a web app, and we'll give you a custom email address for each of your Trello lists. So you can name it what you want, you can do whatever. So if you're on your phone, you can just forward your email to this address, kind of like Evernote does, and I'm sure Dropbox and YouTube, WordPress does it, where you can send posts via email. It's basically that concept just with Trello. So we built that out real quick. I think that app cost $500. We outsourced all of that.
$500 is all it costs you to build that.
Yes. So $500, and Harris, my partner, put up the website for it and has done some back-end stuff, but I mean, less than 10 hours in a year and a half. I mean, not much at all.
That's fantastic. Okay. Gmailo, how much did that cost you?
Gmailo was $200 or $300.
$200 or $300 for Gmailo, $500 for Emailo. Let me just, before I get into what the revenue is today for it, I want to explain, because I think most people in the audience know Trello, but I get so bothered when I don't understand what's in an interview and no one explains it. So I'll tell you this. Trello, it's basically this collection of cards that are each organized. It's a web app that gives you a collection of cards that are each organized by column. and you can decide what each column represents, and you can add as many cards as you want. So for us at Mixergy, it's we have a column of to-do that Anne-Marie has for herself. We have a column with the one most important thing that we need to do, and there's just one card on that. So this week, it's we have to talk to customers and ask them why they signed up. We have another column with suggested guests that we can't invite right now because we're too booked. And so every time we have another guest idea and we can't ask them to come on right now, we add a card underneath that column that says, get that guest in. The problem is every time we want to add a card, like let's suppose you mentioned, Chad Moretta and I had never had him on, I would have to go into Trello and log in and then add a card under potential guests and type it in myself. Versus I live in email. Maybe the request to have Chad on comes to me from email. All I would have to do is forward it to an address that you give me, and it automatically pops under the right column in Trello. That is an amazing idea. It's a simple idea, and it costs you under $1,000 to do it today. We're now fast forwarding to March 2014. Roughly, what kind of revenue do you get from that?
They're just over $1,000 of recurring revenue a month combined. And I've added a third app in there. It's a Mac desktop app that sits in your menu bar, so you don't have to have a web browser, you don't have to do email.
You did that too. I saw that when I got into Trello, and I'm obsessed. I got obsessed with Trello as soon as I signed up for it. I saw that. I didn't realize that was you. Okay.
QuickTrail is the name of it, and it actually doesn't do as well. I think it does about $300 a month. And the thing is, I haven't promoted, like, these things could be optimized so much better. I've thought of selling them off just because I feel a little guilty because I'm not taking care of them as well as they need to be. But yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. You start with a mock-up, and you draw it, and you write a spec, and you send it to a guy who can build it. I mean, all of those are combined total. I think all of those wind up being $1,000 a month. Right now, they're doing per month. I mean, they cost about $1,000 to develop all three of those applications. Combined revenue per month is around $1,200 to $1,400 a month for each one of those now.
For each one. Wait, so overall...
Combined for all three.
For all three. Okay, I want to be clear about that. So every month, you make more than it cost you to make them.
Exactly.
Okay. And this is not a hit, but it's another step forward in the evolution, right?
Yep. Stacking bricks.
Stacking bricks, right. The idea of stacking bricks means what?
It's making sure everything you do in business stacks on top of each other, making sure it's either a principle or a skill that you haven't, well, you could have done it before, but that it just builds on each other. So if you're building iPhone apps today and you go start a CrossFit gym tomorrow, there's probably not a lot of overlap in that. And the more fine-tuned you get with your long-term vision for yourself and your business you're doing, the more you'll see those things converge on top of each other where you're really stacking on top. In the beginning, I don't think there's any way to literally go vertical because you don't know. Like, you might have an idea, but when I was building Bust-A-Cap, that second app, the iPhone app that busted, like, I had no idea I'd be making videos today. Literally no clue. But I tell you what, a ton of the skills I used and building Bust-A-Cap are completely relevant to this. So whether it's a skill or a principle you're building on, making sure everything you do is stacking. And the better you get, the more relevant everything you do will be to each other.
Okay. And the reason I wanted to pause and emphasize that, to really highlight it, is because at the top of the interview where I said that you absorb a lot of knowledge from the internet and from good people, and you come up with a small motto for yourself that you repeat, this is one of those mottos that you just kept repeating over and over again: stack the bricks. And it comes from Amy Hoy. We want to give her credit. I love Amy Hoy. There's so many people out there who are charlatans without really good knowledge behind them, who pretend that they know everything and blog and they sell stuff and they basically mislead people. Amy Hoy is good people. She's a real developer with real knowledge, and she's so good that she's never going to make the hundreds of millions of dollars that other people do who will, like, rip you off. But she's also never going to be on Salty Droid, for example, the site that catches scam artists. She's really good. And so you take that idea, that stack the bricks, and you just keep repeating it to yourself like a mantra, right? Stack the bricks. If ever had a go create a CrossFit gym idea, you'd break yourself with that quickly because you keep repeating to yourself, stack the bricks. Am I right? I interrupted you, but I want to make sure that I'm accurate here.
Oh, no, absolutely. I literally have it sent to me in a text message every day at 7 a.m. So I use if this, then that. And every day at 7, it texts me that to remind me. So I usually have a yearly thing like that. I've been doing that for a couple of years. And it just kind of gives you focus and makes sure that, you know, you're kind of going the direction you want to go. It's kind of like just setting goals, except it's more kind of generalized.
Perfect. And I'm glad also that you said that it's not a perfect stack. We're not talking about every single thing has to fit exactly like Lego pieces that are perfectly aligned. We understand that there's some process of trying to figure out where you're going in life, and along the way you're going to go a little bit in sideways. But I see how everything that you're doing is building. Let's go on. Actually, before we go on to the next point, I have to say that this whole interview is sponsored by Scott, as I said at the top of the interview. Scott Edward Walker is the entrepreneur's lawyer. You can make mistakes when you're building apps, and you can cover yourself. You can make mistakes when you are writing a blog post, and you can always go back and edit it. But there's certain business mistakes that are really too expensive to undo. And if you're going to be in business and you're going to get a lawyer, you want a lawyer who's seen those mistakes. You want a lawyer who can protect you from them. And that's why I recommend Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. If you're curious about him, if you're in the market for a lawyer, go check out walkercorporatelaw.com. And you can always email him too. Tell him that I sent you. He and I are friends. His email address is scott@walkercorporatelaw.com.
One more thing before we move past that is, yep. Hitton Shaw has he tweeted this the other day. He said, experience informs intuition. And Gary Vaynerchuk always talks about trusting your gut. And I think those are two really important things as far as the stacking brick concept, is that the more experience you get, the more you should listen to your gut. And even if it doesn't make logical sense sometimes to do something, sometimes you just need to do it. Like it, and things will happen. And I've found that many times in over the last 2 years is really good. So
then we come to December 2012, right? These apps were in October 2012. December 2012, you go to something called the 5 o'clock club.
Yeah, the Five Club.
Five Club. What's a Five Club?
So John Acuff is a local Nashvilleian. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's a New York Times bestselling author. At the time, he worked for Dave Ramsey and was in his speaking group and wrote a blog, wrote a couple of popular blogs, had written several books and spoke for Dave Ramsey. And he had tweeted out, I've followed him, and I don't think I'd ever met him before, but he just sent out an email one day that said, hey guys, I want to meet at 5 o'clock because fear hasn't woken up yet. And I want to meet at 5 o'clock and just talk about what you got going on. So I drove
out
there.
Wait, because fear hasn't gotten up yet? What does that mean?
He said, start whatever you're doing at 5, because fear doesn't wake up at 5 o'clock. Like you can't even put your shorts on yet at 5 o'clock, much less be scared about what will happen if, which is the ultimate paralysis. So just get up at the butt crack of dawn and start working, and you'll be halfway through your day before you even realize what's happening, before you can second guess yourself. So I literally still get up at 5 o'clock every day and do that. So that's really good. But he wanted to have a meetup just randomly on a Friday in December. I think it was like the week before Christmas. And I show up, and there were like 100 people there, which like it blew. Like I thought there might be 10 or 15. There was 100 folks there, and I was like, wow. And it was really good. John spoke, and then we had breakout groups and talked. And I mean, very laid back, just hanging out and meeting other people in Nashville doing cool stuff. So I went home from that meeting, and over the next couple weeks, like I was getting a lot done by waking up early. So I had an idea that I would make an app for John that was branded in his name and everything, but it'd be called the 5 Club app. And every morning at 5 o'clock, it would enable, and it has a big red check button. You can still download it in the App Store. Just type in 5 Club app or John Acuff. It comes up on either. And at 5 o'clock, 5 on the dot, it opens. At 5:01, it disables and you can't use the app at all. So you can check in, and it registers you as being up at 5 o'clock, and you can comment on other people's statuses and stuff. But super simple. So I mocked it up just like I had the other 4 apps I'd built. And at the January 5 Club, I took it to him and said, hey man, I want to make this for you. And I want you to talk about it on Dave Ramsey's show. I want you to talk about it at conferences you go to. And I want it to be your thing, but I'll support it. And he was like, that'd be great, man. So the app costs I think it was $1,000 or $1,200 to build. And that came out of my pocket. Like, he didn't pay me to build it or anything. So, yeah, that was the 5 Club. But I thought at the time in January of 2013, when I was getting ready to build this, Gary Vaynerchuk was pushing or starting to brainstorm a name for his new book, which came out this past fall. The name wound up being Jab, 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 Right Hook. Well, early on, he had sent out a tweet where he was trying to figure out what the name should be. And at the time, he was thinking he would name it Give, 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 Ask, which is the same concept. It's the concept on his book. And it's the idea of giving value, giving value, giving value, giving value, and then someday asking for something in return and not being ashamed of that when you do. So I wanted to use that concept on John of giving something. One day down the line, perhaps there could be some benefit for me, but that isn't the main point of getting something out of him. but he has a big platform. He has a big audience. And if he shares that, my name's all over it, you know, and I'm trying to start this app company. I've built 4 apps in the last, 8 months, then I can probably get a lot of business out of this. So that was kind of the thinking behind doing it for free, using John. It was a method I believed in. You shouldn't just go pick some random person you don't know to do it. It's somebody I had a connection with, although very loosely, and I wanted to kind of have him behind me.
All right. And so he says, yes, you go and create it. The app makes sense to me the way you described it, but you can't describe it this way to everybody. So what do you do?
Yeah, so he had sent me an email and said, hey, Brian, this was in April, I think, early April. He had done this big, like, New York or Times Square kickoff party. They drove a bus up there and had big, rented several of the big billboards around Times Square, and we're having the kickoff party for the book. And, like, the week before that, he sent me an email and said, hey, I'm getting ready to throw it out on the blog, which he has several 100,000 readers, and email it out to everybody. I was like, hey, man, before you do that, let me make a video for you just explaining what the app does. So, because some people probably don't get it or whatever, and I'll make it kind of short, 30 seconds, and be cool. So I started trying to make the video. And a decade ago, when I was in college, I'd made a couple videos that, were just very much homemade jobs. And I was like, it can't be that hard. But for his blog and his readership and the direction I was going in the beginning of 2013 of having a very app-centric business, I wanted to make sure it was really good. So after 2 or 3 days of hacking around on it, trying to get something that looked good, I came to the conclusion that it was absolutely terrible. Like, it really just sucked. So I remember the day. So that was like a Friday. Well, Saturday comes, and I think the blog post was going out on Tuesday. So it was just a few days away, and I had nothing. And I didn't want to tell him, hey, man, about that video, I can't do it. So I was sitting in my chair in my living room. My wife had gone to a baby shower, and I had an epiphany. I should apply to making this video the same process I use to making these apps. So with making the apps, we've already talked about that. You do a mock-up, you write a big spec, and you hire somebody to build it. Just do the same thing for your video. So I went out and found a video that I liked, mocked it up, wrote a spec on it, and hired a guy to build it for me. And within a day, or maybe it was 2 days, I had this video for $30 that looked really, really good. And I'll give you a link to it. You can show people what it looks like. But like, I knew how hard it was to create a good video. And I knew I'd just spent $30 in just less than 48 hours and had this, like, killer video. And it was just a light bulb. I was like, all right, my experience is I've been around entrepreneurs for a while. My intuition was fairly good. So I trusted myself that this idea of making videos this way could be other entrepreneurs just need to be doing this. Because explainer videos can really help your product and service. But the barrier to entry is they cost $5,000 to $10,000 on the low side. I can show you how to make one for $30. Like, I need to tell people about that.
And so that's the epiphany. You do it. He has it. And now it's time to actually get some money off of this. Yep. And so April 2013? No, April 2013 is when you built this video for $30. Yep. You decide, I'm going to start doing this for other people. And you got your first client around there. Is that right?
Yeah, so I just happened to be on Facebook. I think it was that same weekend while I was building this app. And it was all fresh on my mind. Like, I was excited about it. It was kind of another level of excitement, though. Like, I just knew this was something. Like, my gut was telling me this is good. And I was on Facebook, and a buddy of mine, I had no idea, but he had started a ad agency, a PR firm. And I grew up in Mobile, Alabama, and a guy that lived there, he was running his mayoral campaign to try to put him in office as the next mayor of Mobile. And had a very long shot of getting it. I mean, the odds, the demographic, like, everything was stacked against him. And I saw that, and I was like, hey, these videos are really cool. He said he just talked about them launching an app for this mayoral candidate. Let me email him and see if he wants an app for this video. So I emailed him, said, hey, man, I can make these cool videos for it. You ought to put it in your Facebook campaign and email it out. So he did. He bought one for me. I think I charged him $500 for it. And it was the exact same template that I'd used for the one I just made for John. And then we started a relationship. We made 20 or 30 more videos after that between April and September for his candidacy. We put on Facebook and email, and the guy winds up getting elected and is now, like, today he's the mayor of Mobile. And we wound up I wound up signing a freelance contract with them for managing their social media campaign, which we did some really cool and fun stuff throughout it. But yeah, it kind of just one thing after another led. It's the stacking bricks concept, just one thing kind of rolled into the other. And that was my first Video Fruit sale as a video, and my first freelance contract as Video Fruit as well.
There's a blog post on some of the social media things that you guys did, and one key fun idea that you did to help him get elected, or your friend did. It's on blog.videofruit.com, where one of the things that I love about your blog is, Brian, you take concepts like this and you take stories like the way that this this politician became mayor, and you break it down into simple formulas that other people can apply, and that are actually, even if you don't apply them, they just help us understand the process that someone else went through. And actually, it's called the Letterman formula. That's how you gave it? Yeah. I'm Googling as we're talking to make sure that I've got the right one.
That's probably my proudest. I tweeted this out after I posted. That's probably my thing I'm most proud of, minus all the ads and video fruit. That little campaign we had there was just really cool. It was fun.
You have kind of an, I don't know if I'd call it an infographic, but a formula graphic on there. What does that cost you to make?
I make it myself in Keynote.
Keynote is fantastic.
Keynote for everything. TheNounProject.com. Nathan Berry told me about that in his, actually I read it in his book. But you can download cool icons on there for cheap or free. So I just came up with a basic template in Keynote, and I make it in 10, 15 minutes right before I post the blog.
TheNounProject.com is where we can get
that. Resource.
So I'm curious, if it costs you $30 to make a video, what do you end up selling it for?
It depends. So now I do several different types of videos, but an explainer video can take on many shapes or forms. So if you want something super custom, where we're literally, you have some ideas and a storyboard of your own, and we're going to build it from scratch. So those can run. The most expensive one I've ever done was $3,000. Now, that exact same video, do you take it to an actual, somebody that is explainervideos.com, like somebody like that, it's going to cost you at least $5,000 up to, I think Tim Ferriss spent $50,000 plus on the launch of his chef book a few year or so ago. So they have a vast range. And I'm kind of, my product and services cover a specific niche of people that can't spend that much. So I have the course that you can buy that teaches you how to do them exactly like I do. I have tons of free information on the blog. You can probably piece it together just off that. But if you kind of want the really targeted, super detailed version of how I build apps and build video, they're basically the same. Then you can do that, and it walks you through that process. And you can build one for $30 or $100.
So here's one example that I have from before. By the way, I went from using the web to research everything so that I can add more detail to your story, to suddenly, as soon as you talked about the Noun Project, I'm now clicking around on all the freaking icons. I just bookmarked it so I can shut that down.
Really good.
You told me before we started, and I'm going to give one example. Video, $30. And you told me who you sold it to for $500. Is that typical, or is that unusual, and that's why you told me to kind of blow my mind?
No, that's kind of a going rate. I mean,
$30 to make it using a site like Elance, Odesk, etc. $500 is what someone will pay for it.
$30 is probably on the low end of what they call. Sometimes they can, probably the most expensive one I've done was one for QuickTrailApp.com. It's the Mac-based Trello app. There's an explainer video on that site, and that one costs $200. It was based on, I didn't have a template file to base it on. I just took Apple's video for Gmail. You can video their, it's the new tab system they set up, and had the promotional tabs and all that. So I took that video. I love the style. I found my own music to it from, it was Audio Jungle. And then there was no template to base it on, but I just did screenshots of the entire video and said, hey, this screenshot, I want this. On this screenshot, I want this. And I paid a guy, and that one was $200. I would have probably sold that for around $800 to $900, had I done that custom for somebody. And all that's on the low end. I've been charging less to get business, because I'm in the beginning. So, and my long-term, Video Fruit's long-term, isn't in being a massive explainer video production house. That isn't probably where it will go.
You're not going to compete with Lee LaFever and his site.
Yeah, I have a buddy who runs a Little Dragon, and he's a legit video guy. There's a massive skill set in doing that and doing that really, really well. And I totally respect that. There's totally a massive place for those people. But for people that are building an app for the first time, they can't even touch that guy. They're not even in the ballpark of him. But for a couple $100, you can. If it'll shoot, QuickTrail's app sales increased by 200% when I put a video on the front page. But I couldn't have paid $5,000 for somebody to do it, but I can pay $200 or I can pay $30. So it's focusing on people that are listening to this, that are in the cubicle stuck like me. Those are the people that need an explainer video the most, but can't afford it. So this is a way to get it for cheap and get all the effects of it.
Okay. I can see how you make one for yourself and you see that sales go up. And so you understand the value of it. I can see how you sell it to someone else and you understand the value of it. You do not, though, want to be in the business of creating videos. It's not your passion. It's something that you happen to get into because of the 5 o'clock club that you are part. Excuse me. I keep calling it 5 o'clock, the five club.
There you go.
So then you take another step towards getting you to here, where you are today, which we'll find out what that means for revenue, what that means as a business overall. But that next step is a course. But you don't create the course where you teach people how to create videos. You do what instead?
Yeah, so this totally comes from Noah Kagan, monthly1k.com. If you're in this boat, that's a really good place to go. Mixergy and monthly1k, those will literally, you don't need more knowledge than that. If you're looking for more knowledge, you're just delaying and procrastinating. So one thing Noah teaches is validating what you do. And that's huge. Like, I mean, we kind of did it by accident with Gmailo and Emailo. Like, I didn't know that's what I was doing, but we saw there was demand. We saw there was people looking for it. So we built it. And explainer videos were the same way. We found somebody that wanted them and gave them to them. The course, I went in the monthly 1K Facebook group. I think at the time there were a couple hundred people in there. It was pretty early in that process. There's 3,000 or 4,000 people in there now. So I went in there and just posted it, said, hey guys, here's a video I made. I gave an example, which is huge for pre-selling anything. Give an example. I suck at copywriting, so there's probably 10 grammar mistakes in there. If you read any blog post I write, you can probably critique it, find something wrong. But I posted it in there and said, hey guys, here's a Gumroad link. Gumroad's a really cool way to sell stuff really easily. I don't do PayPal. I've had bad experiences with them. You know, if you want it, go check it out. I think it was selling it for $29 to begin with. And I just detailed out what the course will do, showed them what they can make from it. And I got, I forget the exact numbers, but it was around 20 sales within the first week for that app. I mean, for the course. So, you know, obviously it had validated itself pretty easily. And that just happened to be, again, that I don't even know if that was super intentional, but it happened to be the perfect group to post it in, because the monthly 1K group was full of people that course is specifically targeted for, which are entrepreneurs who are just getting started or on a super tight budget, like a really, really tight budget. And that's who was in that monthly 1K group. So perhaps if I'd have posted it in, you know, a group with people that are further along, that are kind of at your stage or Noah's stage or Amit's stage, y'all probably wouldn't have been near as interested in that kind of thing. But that group just happened to be super interested. But there's a principle there of finding groups of people that your product is focused on and telling them about your stuff.
Create the course. You were selling the course for only $25, which is a shockingly low number, but I get it. You then have customers. You launch the course. The thing is, though, I don't want to just go from getting those customers to launching the course, because I've got someone in my community who pre-sold, and he's got 25 orders of his book, and he's excited for a little bit, and then he has this moment of, oh my goodness, I now have to deliver on it. Right? You had that too. Can you get real with me before you talk about how you overcame it? Just get really personal about what that felt like.
Yeah, it really sucks, honestly, because I don't really know how to describe it really well, but like, you know, you owe these people something. And I was still selling it. Like, I would get an email on a Monday, hey, you sold another $29, or I moved it up to $40 and then $90, and now it's even higher. But like, and then when somebody buys your thing that doesn't exist for $97, and all you have is an outline of it, like, man, like, I got to do it. But at the time, I had a day job that it was pretty discouraging. So I came home at night, and I'd been hustling for like a year hard. And I was tired. Like, you can't keep that pace up indefinitely. And I even took a couple sick days and like worked on it and made major progress in late May. And then I had a trip I went on in June and came back from that. And like, coming back from that trip, it was a week-long mission trip. It was super intensive, and came back and like literally from like the end of June until the course launched in October, it was literally like pulling teeth to get stuff done. And I don't know what that is, because mentally I knew what I needed to do. I'd outlined and done the hardest part of it, which is kind of framing out the content. It was just a matter of shooting, because it's all video-based. It was a matter of just shooting all the videos and me talking into a webcam like this. And it finally took the week I left my day job. I had a friend who's a doctor who's trying to get out of his doctor's practice and do some online stuff. He wanted to come to my house on Fridays and start working with me just to have some motivation and structure. So literally, I didn't feel like I couldn't make – I told him about it and told him how I needed to get it done. So he's sitting right behind me, like right over there, and I'm having to make these videos because there's no way I can be an example to him at all and him know I'm procrastinating on this, which is all it is. It was complete procrastination.
Complete procrastination. You know, it's inner resistance, right? You ever find sometimes when we get started with something really important, an inner voice or inner resistance keeps us from doing it. And what I've had people say to me when I talk about this is, maybe that's your gut telling you that you should just not be in this business. Maybe it's your gut telling you you shouldn't be teaching, that that's for other people. You're shaking your head. No.
That's BS. No, no.
How is that different from the gut that you told us to listen to at the top of the interview?
You have to listen to your gut outside of the circumstance. So anytime you get in the middle of something, there's probably going to be resistance. Seth Godin talks about the dip. That's going to happen. Like, it's happening right now with Video Fruit, and I'm pushing through it harder than I've ever pushed through anything. But it's going to happen. You can't, you know, make a decision unbiasedly about something inside of the situation. If your gut told you before you started it was a good idea, people have bought from you. Like, people, you had an idea, people paid you money for it. There's no way before you even deliver it you can say it's a bad idea logically at all. Like, your voice can say it all it wants. And I kind of, like, my second motto this year is called Break the Seal. And that's kind of, it's the idea of just doing it for the first time. Like, I'd never created a course before. Never written a course. I suck at writing. Like, I'm a halfway good teacher sometimes, but never online, never any of that. So I think a lot of my resistance was I just hadn't done it. Like, I just hadn't literally gone through the motions. I'd listened to people talk about it, which is completely different, but I hadn't physically done it myself before. So I literally broke it down into small steps. My task on my notebook that day, I keep a notebook every day. I write down a list of what I'm going to do that day, physically on paper, not in Trello, of what I'm going to do, and physically cross it off because there's like some kind of satisfaction in that. But my task was turn on the webcam. Like, that was my goal for the day because I knew if I got it on, the chances of me actually doing it were good. It's like if you want to run, put your shoes by the door. We've all heard that a million times, but it works. And if putting the shoes by the door doesn't work, put them by your bed. Like, break it down to the smallest point.
And so break the seal means if, like, there's all this greatness inside you is sealed up in a jar almost, right? And if you could break the seal, then it could come out. And breaking the seal is the small step of turning the webcam on. It's the small step of putting your sneakers on if you're going to go for a run. That's what you're talking about.
Get a small win. If your big thing isn't working and you've been writing on your to-do list for a week, make it smaller. If that doesn't work, make it smaller. And, you know, make it as small as you can until you do it one time. And then you've broken the seal, then you can keep doing it. And the next time I create a course, it'll be a whole lot easier because I've turned on the webcam. I know all the WordPress crap to throw up to actually do it. So there's so many things you have to do that you don't even think about. But once you go through the process, it takes 10 times longer than it will the second time. The second time is so much easier.
Okay. May, you pre-sell it. October is when it launches. For a long time in there, there's pressure. There's inner resistance. There's your personal battle with procrastination, feeling your self-worth. Maybe you were questioning it. Does that feel right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everything you've ever heard, that happens, no matter how hard you don't want it to.
And then you break it and you launch the course. Revenue from the course, do you feel comfortable sharing that with my audience?
Yeah. It did, well, let's see, to date, it's right at $20,000 to date. And that's from October of 2013. So that's, I don't know, 4 or 5 months or something. The price has moved from $29, now it's $397. And it's funny because I do more monthly revenue now at $397. Now I don't sell near as many, but I have less customer service stuff and less to do. And that's always like, I'll probably keep playing with that price. But yeah,
I saw that you were hesitant to say the price earlier, that you said I went from 29 to this, and then it's higher today, but you didn't give the price because you wanted some wiggle room to experiment with it. True.
Yeah. So that's totally. Doing like, I really, by the time you listen to this interview, I don't know what it'll be. Cause I'm like, one goal for this year is to turn it into a book, kind of do the Nathan Berry approach where you have a book, you have a next step up, and then you have your big course. Because I think I could double or triple my revenue just by having a lower price point and a different type of offering. I think I'm leaving a lot of money on the table with that. So that's something that's kind of an ongoing thing. It's another break the seal thing. Like, I had all my videos transcribed in January. Guess what I've done since? Nothing. Like, I need to rewrite it all, basically. But I've never done that.
Are you in Tennessee?
Yeah, I'm in Tennessee, in the Nashville.
Do you want someone from my audience to come in as an intern and learn from you and help break the seal?
Bring it on.
All right. Someone from the audience, volunteer in the comments. If you're in Tennessee and you want to hang out with Brian, and actually, no hanging out. I hate hanging out. Hanging out has its place. Actually, I do it maybe once a week or after work, but during work, no hanging out. Be there, help him directly beyond just being there, and you'll learn something from him.
All right. Even if you're on Skype, that works too.
Sorry?
So even if you're on Skype, that works too. Anybody, yeah. I've just never been through the process, so it's painful, man. It's just the first time you do stuff, the pain is so much higher.
I get it. That's October you launched it, October 2013. September 2013, you leave your job.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
How did it feel to leave your job? And it wasn't just because of the course. We'll get to why it happened. Hold off on that for a moment. But sure. How did it feel to go in and say, forget it, I'm gone?
I mean, it's tough. I failed before, man. Like, I had in 2009, I had moved from Mobile, where I grew up, to Nashville because I got married. My wife had a job up here, so we came. I kind of came on a whim, had an idea for a business. I was going to start this consignment car lot in 2009. Look up how car sales were in 2009. The graph goes very down very sharply. So I was actually shut down by the city a month into that after committing to a three-month lease. And so I did that, and then I went straight into selling stuff on eBay. Nashville's a good place for yard sales, and I was selling stuff there. About a year and a half into that, PayPal freezes $20,000 of mine in my PayPal account. I'm basically kicked off eBay because I can't use PayPal anymore. And then I got the job at the conveyor company in the beginning, managing their eBay account. So I'd had two back-to-back failures, basically, in business. I've learned a lot, but they were, it's an ego hit. There's no way around it. Like, I was in no place to start a business or do anything with business. I needed, like, a rest and coasting time. So there's the thought in the head of what happens if you fail. And I'm about to leave this job. It's a really good job. Like, if you're going to be in outside sales in almost any industry, like, you really couldn't pick a better industry to be in. Like, it's the earning potential is in the high six figures. So like, it's really good, and I'm about to like walk out the door. Like, Brian in 2009 would kick Brian in 2013 for leaving this job, and that's in the back of my head. I'm like, all right, if I lose this big lose a couple contracts and video fails, like, what am I going to do? And so luckily we'd given ourselves some runway. We had got out of debt in 2012. We had done that for hardcore for 4 years since we got married, me and my wife, and that was a big deal for us. So that alone gives you room to do stuff. We can keep our expenses low if we need to. But even if all that happens, even if we're out of debt, our income's low, my wife's working, like, I don't want to be dude that quit his job, started a business, it failed, and he's like at home looking for a job while his wife's working. Like man, I really don't want to go there. So that's in the back of your mind.
I see it. And then you still go ahead and you do it anyway. Did your wife make you second guess it, or was she supportive?
Oh, no. She's the most supportive person you could ask for, probably to a fault. I was way more worried about it than she was. So, yeah, she's totally cool with it. And an important part of that is making sure you and your spouse are on the right side of your dream. You know, don't put your spouse on the other side of what you're doing. That is the worst mistake you could possibly make, because your business can be a success if your spouse doesn't like it. It's not worth it. It's not worth whatever happens for that. So making sure you're on the same page, and if that takes you another year to do it, take a year. Like, it's not worth pushing it and all the consequences that come with that. Like, I love her way more than I love business, and I love business a lot. So you know, having her on the same page, being out of debt, having her have confidence in me went a long ways.
You have a great shot of the two of you on video fruit. The one that where you said, I don't think she'll be happy that I posted it. But you guys look good together, and it's a sweet photo of the two of you, and I can see why you'd want to stay, why you'd want to stay on the right side of her.
Yep.
Frankly, I don't see you doing better. You might as well. Hey, stick around.
I'm with you.
I was wondering if I should even say that. Take a look if
second
you guys are,
go around,
are on his
can't
site.
Get better. So.
Look at what Neil Armstrong. Look at the post called "What Neil Armstrong Taught Me About LA." You'll see what I'm talking about. Okay. The thing that pushed you over the edge had to do with Heaton Shaw, who we mentioned earlier. What happened?
Yeah, so this idea of giving, then asking, I did that with the app with John Acuff, and that was kind of a $1,000 give, a big give. And, you know, that hurts a little bit, but I got some business off of it, and things went well. Well, when I went into Video Fruit, I wanted to use the same concept because I think it really works, like, really well. When I was in outside sales, the more time I put into a proposal, like, don't worry about getting more leads. Worry about doting on your current leads even more. Like, write them a 10-page proposal and give super amounts of details of what they could do different in their business. Neil Patel has a really good post on this on QuickSprout about how he built his first SEO business. And he emailed the investors in VC-backed companies SEO tips. And not just like, hey, I want to do your SEO. It was like, you know, a 2,000-word email with screenshots and arrows and, you know, schematics and all kind of stuff. Like, that catches people's eye. You probably get 500 emails a day of people wanting to blog post and do all this other junk. But if somebody sends you a custom-made infographic video about an infographic you put out, like, that catches your attention. And I did that.
You did that with me. Yes, you took the infographic that Lemonly created for us, the one about how to look good on video, on a webcam, and you animated their infographic.
Yeah, so I did that. I went through a series. I think I did this about 15 times. And I went through just big guys that I respected. You, Kissmetrics, Neil Patel specifically, Jay Baer, Marcus Sheridan, Derek Halpern, just, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk. And I just made a video. I didn't ask them if I could make a video. Like, don't do that. You don't need permission to do that. I asked Seth Godin one time if I could make an app for him. He said no. And I asked him why. And he said, because free stuff always creates 10 times more work for me. That's probably the best email I've ever got. And I said, thank you, and haven't talked to him since. So I just started, I didn't email him and say, hey, Neil, I make infographics. Can I make one for you? I just sent you an infographic. And that shocks you. Like, and when I sent Gary Vaynerchuk one, he was the first one I did like that. He had a popular YouTube talk. It was his Web 2.0 where he says, Smurf it up. It's a popular quote of his. I took it and made a kinetic typography video, which is one of those that has the words moving around and looks really cool and has a voiceover on it. And I just sent it to him, say, hey, Gary, I love your stuff. This is my favorite talk you have. Here's a video. And he tweeted it multiple times, put it on his YouTube channel. I still get links to video from his YouTube video. And I just started doing that. Well, one of them I did was for Neil Patel and Kissmetrics. And I just went to their website, the most popular infographic they have, and it was on how colors affect purchases. And I turned it into a video. And I did the exact same method. I think it cost me $75. And I just sent the video. I found a good guy, sent the thing to him, and he created a video from it. And I sent it to Neil and Kissmetrics and said, hey, guys, I love your stuff, love your blog, love Quick Sprout. Here's a video. And over the course of 2 or 3 months, that turned into an ongoing contract, which kind of led me to the point of leaving my job. So Kissmetrics wanted me to start a weekly video series for them, kind of like what SEO Moz does, or Moz does, their Whiteboard Friday, where it's kind of in person teaching about something to do with their industry. And I'd never done that before. So I'd done all this animated stuff. I'd never done an in-person thing. That's kind of a screenshot / in-person. So there was a lot of procrastination going on there. But we had talked about a price. We'd agreed on a price on what we're going to do it for. And I just physically didn't see the bandwidth of my day of working the day job and doing this. And it's a good contract. Like, I make a decent amount of money on it. And like, it was either stay at my day job and lose that contract, or leave my day job and keep the contract. Like, both of them couldn't happen at the same time. So after a week or two of struggling and a little bit of putting them off a little bit, they finally paid the invoice. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess this is it. So I turned in the notice, and it's been really good ever since. So the business has gone well, and I'm just trying to do things right, you know, just do it the way. Fill the holes that I see and that people want, and it's really worked well.
What did it cost you to turn my infographic, well, Lemonly's infographic, based on what I've learned as a guy on webcam? What did it cost to turn that into a video?
Less than $100.
Less than $100. Wow.
Yeah. So it's just giving these $75, $50 to $100 videos. I found a couple guys, and the HR process of that, like, I think that's minimized. You read blog posts about outsource that, like. It's not quite that easy. Like, finding good people and vetting them and the process, like, that can be tedious. That's almost an art form in and of itself. And I'm not the best at it by any means. I've gotten better as I've done it. But yeah, finding good people can be tough, and finding good cheap people can be even harder. So that's probably a Mixer G course by itself, is learning how to properly hire people. If it's not already, it might be. But
it's funny you should say that. We have a couple of courses on that. And I should recommend that if you're interested in those courses, or if you're interested in those courses, or there's anything that we've talked about that you want to take to the next level, we do have a series of courses that are all available in one nice little package at MixerGPremium.com. And I see a few courses about how to create mobile apps and also how to launch them. For mobile apps, we have Mike and Kwok. People seem to like their course about how they built mobile apps. Here's another one, App Savvy. One of the top app makers, Ken Yarmish, talks about how to lay it out, how to, wireframe it. I couldn't come up with the word. Wireframe it, send it out to outsourcers, have it developed, and so on. And then there's one other one that people overlook when it comes to app and web app development in general. It's a new one by Rob Walling, where he talks about how he gets the early users for his web apps, what he does to get people to try it out, to get people to talk about it, and to get people to become active, ongoing, recurring customers. Rob Walling is fantastic, and he came on and taught that.
That one's bang up. I listened to that one the other day. That one's really, I like that guy. He's really good.
Isn't he amazing? He's so, yeah. He's another one of these guys. Very
He's
quiet.
Legit. I like his style. He's really good.
He's not one of these super slicky salespeople who makes you feel like he's going to change your life overnight. But there's substance to him, and if you talk to him, if you learn from him over months, then you'll become a much better person, and you'll be able to build your business, you'll be able to actually get customers and so on. I wonder if the difference is, Brian, that it's about doers versus talkers, that Rob is a developer who's actually launched his products. You created web apps, as opposed to people who have nothing, but they have courses and nothing but.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference in... And just how, I don't know. I don't know if it's personality, because there's probably people that relate to those people. I just don't nearly as well. Like, I like people that are a little quieter and a little less trumpeting of what they've done. Although I probably do that to some degree. But yeah, I try to find people that I like their style and the way they're doing things. Because a lot of people think, like when they're starting, there's a particular path you have to follow. And there's just not. Like, there's so many ways you can do it. And for me, I just try to find people that are doing it the way I like it. And not that it's the right way, but it's the way I want to do it. And, you know, like Rob is that way, you're that way, Noah's that way. And I just want to put those people in my ear and have their influence on me. So, and that kind of, it works its way, intentionally or not, into the way you do things. And at the end of the day, if I have a successful business, I'd much rather be making a lot of money doing it the way I want it versus making more money doing it a way I feel bad about. Like, it's not worth doing it that way.
And it's all because you do listen to these people, but you don't get obsessed with just listening. You condense it into formulas, into mottos that you repeat over and over. Every day you get an alert, and then you just stack the bricks by taking action a little bit every day, a little bit every month. Even when you have a bad week where nothing happens, you continue the next week and so on and so forth. I'd like to ask you to try an experiment with me, and then yep. I want to ask you the question that I've been kind of hinting at, which is, where are we today revenue-wise? But here's the thing. So I've got a group of people who are experimenting with something similar to what you're talking about, this motto that you repeat over and over. And we just call it a mantra. And it has something to do with what Guy Kawasaki told me back in 2008, one of my first interviewees. He said, look, many people have this big, elaborate plan for what they want to do, and you'd be better off with just a mantra. Just one thing. This is what the company does, and you do it, and you just say it over and over to other people, and you say it over and over to yourself. Let me see if I could find the way that he explained it. There it is, a post from 2008, create a mantra for your organization. For him back then, Alltop was going to be the digital magazine rack. Not a big like description of what it is. We're the digital magazine rack. So hey, you can come to him and say, do you want to add Trello functionality to it? No, we're the digital magazine rack. So he's focused on the mantra. So here's the thing I'd like to do, if you're up for it. Yeah. I want to send you a set of beads like this. And if you could try one of these mantras every day using these beads and give me feedback after a week, I'd really appreciate it. And we'll see if we can teach what's worked for you to other people in the Mixergy audience, or if it doesn't work, we could adjust it as a community and find a better way to do it. But do you have a mantra that now you're getting text messaged once a day?
Yeah. So yeah, and definitely send it over. I'll check it out. What I get text every day is stack the bricks and break the seal. So 7 a.m. every day. That's sent over. And actually, I have one in the evening, too. I went with two this year. And the other one is winners have systems and losers have goals.
That's a great one.
Because I'm trying to systematize a lot more of what I'm doing and focus on steps instead of like the long out there thing. Like, you got to have both of them. So it's not an absolute thing. But focusing on systematizing what I'm doing is pretty important. So those are two things that are, I think one of them's at 7 a.m., the other one's at 7 p.m. every day. So at least subconsciously, that's like working, it's doing something. So
Brian, I had something similar to that too at Mixergy. It was I had chaos here, and what I wanted was systems, but I didn't want just systems for the sake of systems. I didn't want to keep leading people by telling them what to do day after day via email. I wanted to have a system, and I felt that if I could remind myself to do it once a day in the morning when I journaled, it was okay, but it wasn't enough. And so I would walk into work every day. Let me get my camera on myself. I usually only look at the guests and not myself, so I'll bring my camera. So here's how I would do it. I would walk into work and I would say, I lead with systems, and I move a bead. I lead with systems, and I move a bead. I lead with systems, and I move a bead. I really would feel it. I do lead with systems. Frankly, when I showed Joe, my editor here, how to edit, it was a way of me leading him and guiding him and giving him direction with the system. It was this doc that showed using Sketch, which I know you like, step-by-step image sketched up with arrows describing what to do. Next image with arrows describing what to do next and so on. I gave him guidance with systems. So I walked into work. I lead with systems. I lead with systems. And by the time I walked into work, into the office right here where I happen to be, I wasn't upset at how overwhelming it was. I wasn't upset at how everyone wanted things from me. I wasn't confused about what to do. I know what to do. I lead with systems. And then I naturally started to build out my systems. So it's just like one round at least a day, move a bead, feel it. So it's not just I lead with systems, BS, but I really lead with systems. That's what I'm about. When I come here to do Mixergies, the reason that your interview is good, I think you saw part of my process when I pre-interviewed you myself. There's a way that I'm looking for there's a way that I'm telling your story. It doesn't just happen to come out. It's because there's a process here, right? I lead with systems. And the audience didn't just walk away from this with some value because we happen to have some kind of chemistry here today. It's because there's a system here that I led this interview with and that I help lead them with. And so it all comes through because I got really in touch with it and I got obsessed with it and I used these beads to do it. I'd love to buy you a set of beads, have you experiment. If you give us some feedback, I think other people can learn. Even if what you say is, Andrew, this was on my wrist and the whole thing just felt silly, I never did it, that's still feedback because then we'll know to unsilly it.
No, there's even been psychological studies that have shown, like, if you know mentally you need to do something, but for some reason you can't get yourself to do it, if you just, like, go through the exercise, like, if you just, I can't think of an example, if you just go through and do it, like, you will start liking to do it more. Like, that just happens.
You mean if you mentally go through the exercise and do it?
He has a book called Thou Shalt Prosper that talks about that. And that concept is grounded in science.
All right. Well, this is an interesting experiment to see. Sometimes science fails me.
Yeah.
We will see if science hitting, you know, the realities of your life, the realities of all the obligations that you have as an entrepreneur, the realities of your attitude about, do you want to even wear something on your wrist? I don't know. We'll find out if it works. I'm going to ship one to you personally, and we'll get your feedback. And I'd be happy if the audience is curious to say it. By the way, I keep saying to the audience, if you ask for it in the comments, we'll tell you, we'll link it. Because sometimes I go through all this. I forget what it was. It was someone who, I think he offered a spreadsheet or something in the interview. I went and I hunted him down after the interview. You know, people are stressed after the interview. They don't want to really think about it. They just want it to happen. They're a little too nervous about their performance. If they say I'm too much, they reel too much. So they don't want to talk to me. They want a little bit of decompression from Andrew. So when I hunted him down, I got this file and I put it up on the site and not a single download. So I figured, you know what? Why am I chasing stuff down that people don't want? I'll put it out there. If people want it, they could ask for it in the comments. And then I don't have to hunt it down. Then there's pressure for you because the audience is going to ask you for the spec sheet that you sent out, right? Not me putting it. It's the audience asking it. Same thing here. If anyone wants to know about whether these beads work, they can ask me and then I can give it. But I won't just give it because I imagine they want it. All right. Final question. This is a 10K series. We obviously have gotten past the first 10,000 in revenue. Where's revenue today?
From, I guess you can go back to May, but I guess I'm kind of counting from October of 2013 until today. It's right around 50K, right around $50,000.
$50,000, and it's recurring. We've started fairly recently, right? A few months ago. Do you have a sense of, I mean, you gave it to me and I have it up on the screen, but do you want to break it down what your recurring revenue is roughly, or do you want to just lump it together and give it to people? I promise you that if you were open with me before, I wouldn't reveal your secrets. You can share what you feel comfortable with.
I don't mind at all. So I haven't tabulated it all up. These are kind of rough, but around $6,000 a month in recurring retainer type of contracts. So video work or social, I do some social media consulting. I actually have an app going right now that's a third party thing that we built last year. Now they want a second edition to, and that's a 6-month project. So counting all that, that's about $6,000 a month. The course does between $2,000 or $3,000 a month. One of my big goals is to double that. And one of the strategies is, like we talked earlier, to put it into a couple different forms and have some different price points. And then around $1,000 to $2,000 on apps. Some of those are split between two people. But you know, there's a couple of those out there that are doing it. So all in total, it's about It's around 10K a month.
Around 10K a month. The website is Video Fruit. And there's also blog.videofruit.com, right? If people want to connect with you, that's the best place to do it.
Yeah, and I'll email you all of the downloads, the mock-ups, everything I can find on that, maybe some budget sheets of what it costs. So anybody that's interested in that, that concept can apply to tons of stuff. So it's for me, depending on what phase you're in, and that stuff can be like the thing that gets you going. Like it can be really good. I think sometimes people think they're ready to start and they're probably not. Like somebody asked me the other day, you know, what if you go through Noah's course or your thing and you still don't have any ideas? It's like, you know, it might just not be right for you right now. Like maybe you need to wait a year like I did. I had to go work a job for 3 years to get to the point where I was ready to start something again after a couple of failures. So you might just not be ready yet, but you might just need somebody showing you some particular skills or particular processes to help you. And for me, with several things right now, like that's keeping me back from some things. So maybe by me sharing that can kind of push you over the ledge and help you to develop some stuff that I'll use later. Because there's several things that I'd like to exist that I just don't want to mess with. So.
Videofruit.com. Brian, thank you so much for doing this interview. Everyone out there, thank you so much for being a part of it. I urge you to find a way to connect with Brian if you're interested, and don't ask for stuff, you know, except for the stuff that we offered in the comments you can ask for. But generally speaking, honestly, when you follow up, use that Gary Vaynerchuk, Brian Harris approach of give, 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 and then ask.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you all for being a part of it.
Bye. Thanks, guys. Andrew.